Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello!
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy!
Bryce Castillo.
Even with our ghost theme this week. Hi, everybody.
So, let's talk about After Things, guys. Which Game of Thrones?
Yeah, we're going to jump right on in, huh? All right.
Well, here's the thing. We only have two more episodes to talk about. Oh, you see what was on Game of Thrones last night?
I know. And that's can we dive right in to the criticism that Andrew had? I am forgiving of it because I
like him so much. I just don't want him to go away.
You know, you have the abandoned child syndrome.
Oh, you know, I'll tell you what, it's inbred within me, and boy, do I just. All right, well, here, I guess it doesn't make sense unless you go ahead and give your 2 cents first, Andrew. So you go ahead.
I enjoyed last night's episode. But here's the danger of expectations. We were told, you know, season 6 is going to be like six movies. I'm like, great. I love the idea that we're going to get these moving sort of thing, keep moving the story forward. Episode 1 this season was like, I get table setting. All right, remind us who they are, the sticks. It's good. Episode 2, we're going to get our big battle. Oh, no, it's the night before the battle. Good episode. Really good episode. Had this been in season 6... Season 5, it'd be really, really cool. Here I'm like, wow, it's a lot of – okay. Then we get this episode 3. I loved episode 3, partially because my TV's adjusted. I watched it at great conditions. I used the Amazon Prime HBO signal, which is 10 megabit per second versus the other garbage 5 megabit second, the ones that people got stuck with. Enjoyed it. Really, really liked it. It was cool. And then it's like, all right. And then I'm like, cool, yeah, 3 more episodes. And then it's like, hey, last night's episode, like – what happened was good. It was a really good 30 minutes, but it was 80 minutes. And I felt like, man, you guys only got 2 more episodes to go. And I'm worried because last week I was defending like, no, they got more episodes. Like they didn't shoot everything. They didn't blow off all the fireworks on the episode 3. Don't worry. And then I'm like, oh, maybe it is just going to be about, you know, who's worse, Cersei or Daenerys, and what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean that is the conflict is about who sits on the Iron Throne,
or will there be an Iron Throne?
Or yeah, I guess if there is a thing to sit on at the end. But Brian, you go ahead.
Well, let me offer 2 contradictory thoughts. Number one, I liked this week's episode more than I liked the Battle of Winterfell because
co-signed,
Harris Day,
co-signed.
Okay, so Bryce is on the same team.
Absolute plus one on this one, yes.
Because it reminded us what is great. It's back to form. It's this is what the show has always been, is chess. It's been the greatest chess match in the history of television. And for a brief moment, we just saw a bunch of, and I guess, you know, keeping with the metaphor of chess, there are times that everybody's, you know, threatening each other. And then there's a brief moment where somebody makes a move and all the pieces take each other out. That's what we saw last week. That's not necessarily the most interesting part of chess, but it is an important part. It's a fine, you know, exciting moment. But now we're back to playing chess. And to my surprise, they're making the shocking assertion that maybe Daenerys isn't right for the throne. And maybe she's a little bit too power hungry. And maybe she's a little bit too much like Cersei and all that stuff. Now, having said all that,
or her crazy father.
Correct, yes. Having said all of that, the episode did feel astonishingly small. Like, they show up at King's Landing with, I don't know, a few dozen guys. They talk a bit.
That was 4 a parlay.
I understand. I understand. I'm just talking about in terms of the scope of visuals or whatever. Like, you know, the one dragon getting killed felt small and kind of unearned on the part of whatever. Was it Yono? Is that his name?
Euron.
Whatever.
Euron.
Yono. Ono and Yoko Ono's son, Yono.
Yeah. And then, you know, Missandei getting kidnapped felt kind of unearned, and it felt small, so I understand why somebody wouldn't like it, but on balance, it was a return to form for the things that I liked most about it, and a reminder that there are still many twists and turns waiting for us, and seeing our great invading army reduced to a dragon and a power hungry Targaryen. It has me guessing now, and that's one of the things that that I love most is not knowing what's going to happen.
All right, so I'm gonna go back. So
can we get Justin's take first?
No, please, Justin.
No, go ahead, Andrew. Go ahead.
My guess, my issue is like Daenerys might be bad. Yeah, when she incinerated Samwell Tarly's, you know, family, like right there, because out of ego, I'm like, that die was cast last season. I'm like, she's going to probably become the main villain. I'm like, she's going to be, that's going to be the big thing about her, she becoming the villain of the piece. So I've just been waiting for that to unspool, and finally we're getting to it. And I'm like, well, yeah, we were there last season. Then, like, my guess, like you talk about, it's like a chess game. It's like, well, hey, we're going to show up to parlay with Cersei because, you know, she's honorable and she doesn't break her word. I'm like, why are you even doing this? Unless something horrible is going to happen. Something horrible always happens when you do this. So,
yeah, I was stupid enough to post on that stupid Game of Thrones subreddit. And so my phone has just been going off with the dumbest opinions on the internet.
What did you post?
I thought that the parlay at the end, I was surprised when I saw it, because I initially thought that a message like that could be delivered via Raven or via messenger or something like that, that you didn't have to have the parlay there. And it should have at least been reinforced with the idea of like Daenerys saying, no, like I demand to go there and have this and my presence there to, you know, because they're there to win the hearts and minds of the people of King's Landing. If the people of King's Landing, specifically inside the Red Keep now, stage a riot to get Cersei out, then everything goes a lot faster and cleaner than it would be if they have to storm through people that are defending it.
Her last dragon is in range of the crossbows.
So, all right, then there's the idea of the I don't know whether or not it was just bad staging that the dragon is far away. I in rationalizing it in my head is like, okay, did they mean to show that the distance between the company, the Unsullied, and you know, Daenerys and Grey Worm was outside of the range of the large bow and arrow stuff, and then that the dragon was outside of the range of the crossbows, which is like weird because we don't really get a ton of like super big perspective stuff when the Rhaegal gets shot down in the sea. But I assumed, I wrote that off as like, okay, so this is the reason why Tyrion going forward is basically like one half him offering like the possibility of martyrdom, because now he's walking in range of the bow and arrows. Anyway, so I'm fighting with idiots on the internet about the stupid parlay, and it's post on the internet. It's always a bad idea. So in terms of the show, though, look, man, 2.5 hours of Tyrion and Varys talking. I just love it. I just love it so much. I just like, it's just, they're talking and they're trying to figure stuff out and they're like puzzling things out. And like, there's even more like, Varys like, I've always done things for the realm. Listen, you chubby, you bald, you cue ball. You've jumped sides so many times that, you know, you made so many moral equivalencies. You have made it very, very clear that you have always just found the larger boat, of course, in search of eventually doing something great for the realm. But you've certainly hopped sides enough times and you've just always read the you know, you put your ear to the ground and knew where the buffalo were herding. I don't know. I liked, you know, the Rhaegal stuff and the Euron's fleet stuff to me felt a little like, all right, we got to make sure that this is an evened up kind of fight by the end of it. But in general, the emotional moments mattered to me. I cared about them. I like these characters. Yes, more could have happened. We could have sped further along, but I wouldn't go so far as Brian and Bryce saying that this was something that I enjoyed more, because to me, this is the 1-2 punch of Game of Thrones, is that it has the like super okay, but if we put this person there, and I'll whisper this person in this person's ear because I'm going to think that they're going to eventually feel greed and they're going to want this, along with the like cinematic level insane battles where then everything kind of collapses onto itself. And also, this was the first time really since he was deposed as Hand in King's Landing that Tyrion gets to do high-level Westerosi politicking, which is something that was one of my favorite parts of the show, and I kind of felt like the show had really been missing since he was deposed, and then he has to find his way all the way to Essos, and then even when he takes over as Dany's Hand, they're not his strong suits. He's not, like, it's like his strong suit is like, well, I know that this person, that their son is a tailor, so let's make sure that we make him the king tailor, and that way we'll secure these lands and yada yada yada. And that's why this is what I really got into the fight with on the internet with the parlay thing, is that for Cersei, yes, she could go and attack them. If she fails to kill the people that she needs to kill, if she fails to kill the dragon, if she fails to kill Cersei, then now she has shown herself as weak for the remaining houses that do stand at her stead. Without the rest of the Seven Kingdoms, or at least the Seven Kingdoms that she has in her possession, she has very little army and she has no economy going forward. It is a matter of time via siege that she is that somebody sells her out and we are done with all this. So I got it. Although I wish they would have made it more of an active choice by Dany to spell out, like, no, we shouldn't just, like, we could send a raven saying, hey, surrender, because we know you're going to say no. I want to make sure that the people see that I am coming over to take her into custody.
We did see an awful lot of characters collapse into one dimensionality in this episode, starting with Gendry, who's like, I'm a lord now and I'm in love with you. Marry me? No. Oh. And then we see it with Jaime. It's like, psych, I was always damned. Get bent, giant lady. And then off he runs. And then Bronn shows up, snidely whiplash, like, yeah, I could kill you, and maybe I will, maybe I won't. Get ready to be killed or not be killed. Bye. Like, it was
like Jamie's had facets to it, right? Like,
well, because we also don't know why he's going down there,
right? He's right.
He has said, hey, I'm hateful and so is she, but we don't know whether or not that's like, I must die by her side, or like, I need to stab her in the face.
I think he's definitely going to go to kill her, but he can't tell Brienne that, otherwise she would go with him and he likes her.
But also it was a good reminder that, oh, this character that we slowly have come to be on the side of over the course of 8 seasons was damned in the very first episode. And it was a reminder that it's like, oh, wait, no, we can't really like Jaime because he definitely is a genuinely bad person. And as such,
or that we only like him when he is actively doing things, right?
Right.
Like, he has to actively be heroic for us to care, or else the balance will always be in favor of some awful things that he has done in the past.
Yeah.
But the Bronn of the Blackwater thing, I read a little bit more as like, all right, look, this is me playing both sides. Congratulations, I'm playing both sides. So whoever wins, I win. I'm a guy very much like Tyrion, like trying to find whatever edges he can to exploit them and lean on them and then be elevated by it. As for the Gendry thing, I don't know. I mean, like, this has been kind of the arc that really Arya wanted. You know, when they part ways, when he is going off with the Brotherhood Without Banners, she's like crying and like asking like, oh, you know, I could be your family. And this is her getting everything that she wanted, only to find an Arya that is not the person that, you know, was left.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The I'll tell you, that conversation between Varys and Tyrion was positively electric, where they explain in cautious detail to the audience that there's no pure answer to this. And we've spent a few seasons thinking, oh, it's going to lead up to Jon Snow and Daenerys taking over the throne. But then, like, they did a great job last night of convincing me that it's like, that is so problematic in so many different ways and can't possibly happen. So now that I know that, what is the solution that'll make me feel satisfied? And I can't think of one. I can't think of anyone, including Tyrion and Sansa, because they did a great job of corrupting, in this one episode, my opinion of Sansa. She's got so much Littlefinger in her at this point that it makes me a little oogied out to imagine her on the
throne. And also, there's I don't know, there's some theories. There is good stuff on the internet.
John knew the ultimatum. Danny laid it out in no uncertain terms. I just told you how there's peace in this throne. And the second he told his sisters,
might as well have issued a press release.
Right.
I did appreciate that moment.
And also in the grand tradition of the Stark hero, right? Like the Stark hero goes to Cersei and says, hey, I know you're screwing your brother and that none of these kids are Robert's. So you better step down, lady. She's like, LOL, you're dead. Rob Stark's like, ah, man, I know I told you, Walder Frey, that I would marry your daughter, but man, I love this lady. What a world, right? Oh, you're all dead. And now in the final episodes, yet another needless secret revealed for the sake of honesty and truth and family.
Although I did deeply adore two things. One, that it was unspoken and he just goes to Bran and is like, Bran, tell them. And then also that the camera cut away and spared us the tedium of the explanation. Like, we get it. They explained the thing to the people.
Yeah. Also, just ate the 50 milligram edible explaining the plot of The Simpsons again.
When did Gilly become so worldly and awesome and poised? Like, she's all like, yes, I think we know how babies are made. I'm awesome.
Once she got out of the north and traveled a bit and went to the Citadel, that's how she became worldly and poised.
Sure, sure. And I understand that in the theoretical. It's just we didn't see much of that becoming a lady in her. It's just like, you know, we kind of, next time we see her, it's like, oh, look at you. You've become a lady about town, haven't you?
I didn't really read that as her becoming a lady. I thought it was more like, stop embarrassing me. You're stammering.
Well, but
I guess I read that more as a strengthening of their relationship, that there was less of one of the each of them being in a strong position, because either she was in the north pulling the scared Sam around, or she was in the south and he was doing his best to keep her alive and put her in good positions. And at this moment we see kind of a copacetic equal powered relationship between the two of them, really, for the first time.
Which I guess we would expect from a mature and healthy relationship, which, by the way, has me thinking that there's a non-zero chance that Samwell Tarly sits the throne. I enjoyed that representation.
What did you think, Andrew?
I'm just, you know, I guess I've said before, it's like, I would be okay with this episode if it wasn't like there's three episodes left and I just watched one kind of catch everybody up on what's been the theme for a long time, which is Daenerys is an awful person and she is an awful person and we're coming to collide with her. And then it's like, now we're kind of getting to there. And then it's, I don't know. And then a certain, this is like, you know, hey, we're going to go talk to Cersei. It's like, this is always bad. Somebody dies. It's always a bad thing to have happen. And it's just, I don't know. I just was like, I will defend their defense plans for Winterfell, because I've heard a lot of criticisms that don't make much sense. I'm sure they're better strategies, but as far as like, yeah, we're going to show up with our one dragon here and whatever, to go ask Cersei to surrender. It's like,
But you didn't read that as I mean that it's they say at Dragonstone that this is a play for the hearts and minds of the people.
Well, yeah, but I understand that the Daenerys is, and then when the world falls down on them, they'll know. I'm like, yeah, but this is send a friggin' raven, send an emissary, send somebody to go make a point of this. But it just, to me, it just, I don't know. I mean, the show gets criticized because of how quickly people move around now, like teleport from point to point, you know, and like next scene, what's probably should have been weeks has elapsed. Now they're here. To me, it was just, it was a thing a writer wrote because they wanted to have that scene, not because it made sense. That's how it felt to me.
I mean, it definitely is. You get the cinematic moment of Dany looking at Miss Andrew's head getting cut off, and you get the Dracarys moment. So I totally can understand that. And at the very least, even if my justifications are correct, they should have been more clearly spelled out to avoid to avoid people just thinking like, did you just literally risk your entire military operation
to hand a note?
Yeah, because I can also buy the idea that, like, you know, Tyrion goes and makes this move of like, all right, well, either Tyrion's going to speak his piece, and by the way, part of his spoken piece is revealing that he knew that Cersei was pregnant before she has told Euron Greyjoy, which, by the way, the next person who deals with Cersei, make sure that your maester is Maury Povich to start doing these paternity tests. Because she has run this same scam 3 times now. So now there might be an information advantage gained there. And then if he gets gunned down, if he gets shot down by bows and arrows, then it's a moment of a martyrdom for the side. And if you are fighting for the hearts and minds of the people inside King's Landing, then, you know, a person without arms being shot down, you know, not the worst thing there.
I just if it wasn't the Cersei we've seen, I mean, she blew up everybody in the Red Keep. She's murdered everybody there. And then it was like,
but she made that look like an accident. Like she still hasn't, she didn't say like, oh, this is a coup that I'm taking. This was, oops, all these people I hated died. And my son is going to now be the unquestioned ruler, but then he killed himself. And so now she takes the throne. And the Red Wedding was something that was a reputation scarring event because it did break protocol.
I guess my point, like the Red Key, I kind of at that point, like I'm dictator for life, no matter what you want. But also it's kind of like another Tyrion speech to Cersei appealing to her better. I'm like, really? like we all know that ain't gonna work.
I will agree with you on that one. That felt a bit more like, what, you're supposed to be the smart one. What do you think is about to happen? Like,
but it has been
like
a long time.
Lucy's never held the football for you. Why are you still running towards it?
It's been a long time though since he was acting.
I didn't read that as him thinking that anything was going to come of it.
Sure.
I read that as this is all theater before a very long siege. Like that was the idea before. Now maybe Daenerys jumps the line and decides she wants to burn everything. But the point of Tyrion from the very beginning was this can't be a hostile murder. So if we want the siege to go as fast as possible, then we need to grease the wheels.
Well, 2 episodes left.
You guys are gonna have to do the, well, I mean, I don't think we're gonna have an episode because I'll be gone.
Right. We won't have one for the final, for the final week. Just have to follow the Twitters, I guess. Or Court Killers. Court Killers, we do.
Yeah, man.
Spoiler time.
You should have Andrew on Court Killers. And you guys, that'd be cool. The final countdown.
Maybe we can. We could do probably a bonus size round table, like immediate, maybe even schedule it after the show or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
I'll be in India during the final episode.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Andrew, he's also going to be
on vacation.
Holy cow. Fun that's fact, right. my gym trainer is also going to be in India during the final episode. She's scheduled, like she told me today, she was like, oh, no, I got it all figured out. There's going to be a watch party. No idea if it'll be in English or what, but I'm excited.
Mm-mm.
You guys want to jump to picks?
Yeah. I'm diving into, man, there was some podcast that I really jumped into hardcore, and I'm having a hard time accessing the name. I guess
I've got one. Okay, while you're doing that. I've got a pick. It's actually a pick that I'm stealing from Andrew, because he recommended it a few weeks ago, and I really like it. It's NPR's How I Built This.
Doggone it. That's literally what I've been diving into. Oops. That's great.
Yeah, it's
great,
pretty cool.
Great, guys. Great.
I was listening to I think it's the latest episode with John Foley, the guy from Peloton.
That's the live one, right?
Yeah. It is genuinely interesting to hear the story of these entrepreneurs and how they go from, you know, taking a chance and looking for investment and looking for partners and eventually growing it into these success stories. Though I will say, listening to this Peloton one, it was a reminding moment, a flag in the sand to remind us just kind of where some people get to benefit in life from certain things. Of him, he's talking about, you know, he went to Harvard Business School and then he got out of school right when the housing market collapsed, and was able to get a job. Granted, at a company he had worked at before, City Search, because his brother is the CEO of Ticketmaster, and those two companies had merged.
That's a convenient.
It's a very convenient sort of, and I don't hold it against him because. But it's just a reminder of like, oh yeah, you know, sometimes it's more than just good ideas and good business.
I heard the same thing. I think it was on Pendulized podcast. He was talking about Sam Harris, the neuroscientist and host of the what was it? It's no longer Waking Up, but whatever it is, his podcast. Apparently, his family got all their money because they made The Golden Girls, which is why he was able to run around and meditate and do drugs in India and all that stuff.
And like, look, if you have the option, I
highly recommend it. If that's the simulation you want to sign up for on your next lap, go
sure.
for it.
You know, I mean, it was just an interesting moment in a very, very interesting story of this, you know, home service biking content company. How I Built This.
So I got a pick.
Sure.
Oftentimes I'll listen to an audiobook or something to go to sleep. And the problem is every so often the content is too compelling for me to quite drift off to sleep. But my goodness, have they figured out the exact right sweet spot on the Headspace app? If you go, there's a subcategory called sleep. And some of them are guided meditations that are designed to let you fall asleep. You set it for 5 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they also have these soundscapes where it's like you visit an imaginary place, like, Riverland or Snow Palace Land or whatever. And is it like
sound effects?
Correct.
Or
and
music?
And there's a slider bar for how much you want the talking and how much you want the environment.
Oh, yes.
And to be honest, I don't even know that you set a time limit on it, but it's just interesting enough that you don't feel that hollow loneliness of like, okay, I'm left alone with my thoughts. You feel like you're on a journey, but it's just boring enough that you never mind drifting right off to sleep. It is it is a potent, like, if you're somebody like me who has a difficult time, a tenuous relationship with sleep, it's extremely great. Like, I can't think of a single time I've managed to stay awake through an entire one of those sleepscape things.
Very cool. Headspace.
Very cool. Yeah, go ahead, Andrew. I don't know what
I got nothing. I got nothing.
Game of Thrones.
I don't know what. I pick my friendship with Andrew May.
You should all try it.
Highly recommend it.
Five stars.
Two thumbs up.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.